This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
It's time to get in the zone.
Time to get in the zone
with the 49ers Web Zone.
This is the No Huddle Podcast
with Al,
Zane,
and Brian.
What's up, faithful? You're listening to another episode of the 49ers Web Zone No Huddle Podcast, a part of the Odyssey Network. I'm Brian Rennick. He's Al Sacco. Free agency is over. The draft is still about a month away. This 49ers team is a content machine now, but it's been kind of quiet the past, I'd say, about a week now. And there's a few things that that are happening in 49ers world that we want to touch on. The first being the 49ers have a new owner. And I know that sounds weird to say. We didn't even know that they were up for sale. But 49ers CEO Jed York has got enough money to buy the principal shares of his mom, Denise DeBartolo York. And Jed York is now the principal owner.
Must be nice.
Of your San Francisco 49ers.
It must be nice to have that money. Tell you what.
Right? Right?
You know, I was thinking about it today when I read that. And I mean, New York's been running the day-to-day anyway, right? So Sure. Who knows what's going on behind the scenes. Gary Plummer did tell us on an interview 2017 that Denise hired Kyle, that she kind of stepped in and it was between Kyle and Tom Cable, and she said, "We're hiring Kyle Shanahan." So that was a bummer. You can go back and check out that interview if you didn't hear it. It was pretty sure it was 2017. But that's what he had to say. But you know, I think with York, it hasn't been pretty the whole time. There's been some growth with him. When he first took over, he was young. They had the Mike Nolan firing and Singletary took over, and he probably hired Singletary too soon. Mm-hmm. He probably should have let that play out a little bit, but you know, he was figuring it out, and then he got it right with Harbaugh. Things went south with Harbaugh, and I'll always say it wasn't that they had to get rid of Harbaugh because Harbaugh is a crazy person. It's what happened afterwards with Tom Sula and Kelly, but all that is history. They got it right with Shanahan. They got it right with Lynch. And what he's done since then, the best thing he could do is he just got the hell out of the way.
Yeah,
he's let Kyle and John run the franchise. They both obviously know what they're doing. They've brought this team to four out of the last five NFC championship games. They have, if not the best roster in the NFL, certainly one of them. And he's it seems like he's really grown. So, you know, as long as he hires people who are stable and stays out of the way, you're seeing with the Panthers right now, right? An owner that's maybe a little bit too involved.
Yeah.
Things have gone south. So if York keeps doing what he's doing, man, I think he's growing a lot in the, you know, what, past 4 years, 5 years, whatever it's been, maybe even seven, maybe since mm-hmm. he did hire these guys. And, you know, we'll see. He's going to be the owner for a long time, it looks like. So,
yeah,
whether you're happy about it or not happy about it, he's going to be here for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, I I'm hard pressed to think that this is going to change anything. Like you said, I think that York learned his lesson after, you know, the Harbaugh debacle and the Tom Sula and Chip Kelly debacle, in that, you know, when it comes to owning a sports franchise, there's very few owners who meddle and succeed. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at, well, I mean, you look at guys like Jerry Jones, and you could argue, I mean, are they succeeding? They haven't won a Super Bowl in a long time, but neither have the 49ers. So let's, you know, but they've at least made a couple since the Cowboys last made a Super Bowl. And you look at guys like Mark Cuban, you know, and you think about the owners of professional sports franchises, and you think about the ones that you know off the top of your head, and they tend to be the ones that meddle so much that their teams just suck and they just get ridiculed. And so, you know, I hope, and I think that York learned his lesson, that, you know, the best thing that he can do as owner is just sign the checks and keep on moving on. Right. And not interfere in the day to day. And I don't think that just because he's now principal owner rather than CEO, that will change, but you know, there is a small fear there because again, it is his money now, right? Like he purchased those shares. That is his money that he used to purchase the shares from his mom to be principal owner. Now, again, he's not the single owner, right? He's just the principal owner. He owns the most shares. I assume that his mom still kept some shares and whatnot. So, you know, again, he's not a David Tepper. He doesn't own the whole franchise. He's just the principal owner. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if things change. I sincerely hope not. I anticipate that they won't. But yeah, I mean, regardless, it's still news in 49er land, and you know, and kudos to Jed York for working his tail off as CEO to, you know, be able to do something like this. Like, you know, again, like you said, must be nice. And obviously, you know, he comes from money, so it's not like he's busted his ass to earn it, but. Still, he is the owner now of this franchise, and his words, "You can't fire the owner," those ring true even more now because he is the actual principal owner and not just the owner's son.
As long as he keeps putting good people in place in the general manager role and the head coach role in places like that, and gets the hell out of the way.
Yeah,
I don't want exactly. You know, you don't even want to know your owner's there most of the time, and I exactly. think that's where the Niners are at right now. So. You know, nothing to go crazy about. Again, if you look at, you know, when the book's going to be written at some point, the early years, you know, was messy, it was dysfunctional, but again, it looks like that he learned his lesson. He put these guys in place. Cause you got to remember, they, at the time when Shanahan and Lynch got their deals, they are unprecedented deals in terms of length, because the Niners had gone through two coaches in 2 years, yep. really 3 and 3 years. And it would have been 4 and 4 years when you caught Shanahan. There were leaks everywhere, and they had to prove to York had to prove to Lynch and Shanahan, listen, like, this isn't going to get out. We want commitments that we're going to be here for a while. You're going to give us time to turn it around. To his credit, he did it. Mm-hmm. He did turn it around, and we are where we are right now. So,
yeah,
you know, hopefully things, like you said, continue that way in the future, and the Niners continue to win, and York stays out of the way, and Shanahan and Lynch hopefully can be around forever and keep winning games. We'll see how that goes. Did you catch any of Shanahan's presser today?
Lynch.
Not Shanahan. Sorry, Lynch's pressure for that.
I didn't watch any of it, no.
So he was, I thought, nothing earth-shattering is going to happen in these, right?
Yeah.
But what he did come out and say is that they're actively speaking with Brandon Ayuk on contract negotiations. There have been no trade discussions, and those reports aren't accurate. He also said that the team is okay with are you playing on this fifth year option?
Sure.
Now, I don't know. Not long after that, maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes. I don't know how long it was. Brandon Ayuk took the Instagram. I think it was Instagram.
Yep.
And he put out these emojis. And for those who don't know, it takes me a really long time to figure out what's wrong with emojis. I'm not a good emoji guy, but I figured it out. So here's what it was. If you haven't seen this, just 5 emojis, a dollar sign, a guy talking, a bull, a poo emoji, and a dude walking.
Yep.
So after, you know, really put racking it through my brain, money talks, bullshit walks.
Yeah,
is what Brandon Ayuk tweeted after John Lynch's presser. So what that tells me is that Ayuk has not seen the dollars that he's wanted to yet. These guys aren't close in terms of that. It doesn't mean they're not going to get there, but that's where they are right now. And I just thought it was really funny because you go through, like, you know, you're reading Twitter and, like, you know who the shills mm-hmm. are for the team. There's mm-hmm. a few of them, but, you know, Brandon Ayuk is under contract. And John Lynch said, like, they're actively negotiating, like, end of story and, like, stuff like that. It's not. And I just thought it was really funny that people say that. And then it came out a little bit later. Like, this is still a negotiation. This is still ongoing. Here's kind of what I think of it. Do I think they're going to sort it out? I kind of do. I do, for the reasons we talked about last show, where, like, he's going to be part of the core in 2025 and beyond. Where are you going if you don't have him this year? But having said that, he still has a dollar number in his mind. And the 49ers are not a team that's going to throw 600 times. He's probably never going to get 170 to 200 targets in this offense. Does he want that? And if he's not going to get that, are the 49ers going to pay him whatever, 50, 60 million? It's probably going to have to at least be $60 million guaranteed. Or is there going to be a gap there? So the way that I see it, if it does linger and it gets into training camp, yeah, I know he's on the one-year deal. He's going to hold out. He wants his money. So it's not like they have that 1 year and you're like, oh, you can do nothing about it. He could say, trade me. He could say, I'm going to hold out. And what happens there is, like, if he does hold out, injuries can happen. He could start the season slow. And the Niners can't afford it this year. And I can't deal when people say, like, oh, it doesn't matter. He's going to stay in shape. Football shape is different than regular shape. And Nick Bosa said it himself. I don't know how many people that told me. It doesn't matter that Bosa's not here. He's in super great condition. Yeah, he is, but football condition is different. Bosa said it himself. It took me a while to get going.
Yeah.
It took me a while to get in football shape after the holdout. It does. So that's always part of the issue if it does hold out a little bit. Now, the flip side to that, Brian, is our wide receivers maybe turning into running backs in a way? And what I mean by that is there's been so many good wide receivers to come to the league recently, and this draft class is loaded. Our team is going to be reluctant to give big deals to wide receivers. I don't know. Time will tell. And there's a few guys that have contracts coming up, Lamb and Jefferson. I'm missing somebody. Chase, Ayuk. So we're going to see what these guys get paid. But listen, maybe, you know, who knows? This to me, well, listen, they were going to sign Nick Bosa. They were going to sign Fred Warner. They were going to sign George Kittle. This to me doesn't fall on that level. I do think they will sign Ayuk, but I also think there's a little bit of, could this go the way of just Forrest Buckner? And then maybe they do draft his replacement this year. I don't know.
So, you know, you talked about, we've talked at length about this. I feel like this might be the fourth, maybe fifth episode in a row where we've talked about Brandon Ayuk, and it's because it's important. Right. And we're trying, I know for me, I'm trying not to harp on the same things that I've said in the past. And, you know, it's interesting you brought up the point that, you know, Brandon Ayuk probably will never get the target share that a Justin Jefferson or a CeeDee Lamb would get. So I pulled up Julio Jones's Pro Football Reference, right? I wanted to see where Julio Jones was with Kyle Shanahan as his offensive coordinator. So I looked at 2015 and 2016. Those were the two seasons Kyle Shanahan was offensive coordinator in Atlanta. In 2015, Julio Jones had 203 targets. 203 targets. Now, Brandon Ayuk is not Julio Jones. I understand that. But he had 203 targets, and he had 136 receptions for 1,871 yards. He averaged 116.9 yards per game, and he had only 8 touchdowns, which is wild to me. 8 touchdowns on 203.
Yeah, Julio never scored a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah,
he was
203
always, like,
targets. Yeah. In 2016, right? That was Matt Ryan's MVP year. That was the year they went to the Super Bowl. Julio Jones had 129 targets. So he lost almost 80 full targets, which is interesting, right? They spread the ball around a little bit more, but still 129 targets. If you look at Brandon Ayuk's season from this past season, right, it was his best season by far. And as far as targets go, he had 105. The previous season, he had 114. So I do think there's a world where Brandon Ayuk could get a little bit more of the volume. The issue is he's not going to get to that world if Deebo Samuel is also on this team. And, you know, the more I think about it, you know, we talked about this with John Chapman on our last episode. I don't think the 49ers are interested in paying $50 million a year for two wide receivers. I just don't think that they are.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, that's outrageous, right? That is far too much. And so that's why, you know, I think we're on two timelines here, if we're being perfectly honest. I think Brandon Ayuk understands that his best leverage to be traded is right now, right? It's pre-draft going into round one. He's going to exert as much pressure as he can on this team to either get them to trade him or get the contract that he wants. Now, I don't think that's going to work.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I think the 49ers are fully content to hold on to Brandon Ayuk unless they get an offer that they feel like, listen, we just cannot pass this up. But Ayuk is going to exert pressure and probably is hearing this from his agent. Listen, this is where our leverage is. It's pre-draft. Once we get through the draft and we get through round one, our leverage is gone because there's zero chance that the 49ers are going to trade Brandon Ayuk post-draft. So Brandon Ayuk is going to put the full court press on right now to say, hey, you know, this is what I want. If you're not going to give it to me, trade me. And I'm going to make noise, right? Because that's how these negotiations work now. It just is. That's the world that we live in. But to me, there's two timelines. There's the pre-draft timeline and the post-draft timeline. And I honestly, and I've said this before, and I say it again, I still think that Deebo Samuel, if there is a wide receiver traded by the San Francisco 49ers, I still think that it's more likely that that wide receiver is Deebo Samuel than that wide receiver is Brandon Ayuk, because Brandon Ayuk fits this team and his quarterback better than Deebo Samuel does. And not only that, but if you trade Deebo Samuel, you want to trade him this offseason, because whoever you are trading him to, if you wait until next season, he's only got a year left on his contract. And not only that, but he's a year older. He's got more miles on his body. He's probably going to have an injury in 2024 because he's had an injury almost every season, right? And if you want to maximize your return on Deebo Samuel, you want to do it now rather than after this season. And so if you trade Deebo Samuel post 6-1, right? So post June 1st, you get a 6.65 cap savings for 2024. You get a 6.65 dead cap hit for 2024. So almost a $22 million cap savings in 2024. And then your 2025 dead cap is 15.1. If you do not trade him and you decide to release him, because there is an out in his contract after 2024, if they release him before 2025, they still incur a $15 million dead cap hit. So if you release him, it's 15.1. If you trade him before this season, it's still 15.1. But you save $22 million that you can then roll over, right, into 2025. So financially speaking, it makes far more sense to trade Deebo Samuel than it does Brandon Ayuk. Because Brandon Ayuk is only $14 million on the cap in 2024. And if they negotiate an extension, that number is going to go down. It just will. And so right. To me, like I said, it's two timelines. They're waiting for a team to either blow them away for a Brandon Ayuk trade, at which point I think they would, if they get blown away, I think they would pull the trigger. Or you wait, no one does it, you draft, and then you start to look for teams that might be willing to take on a Deebo Samuel, like the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so to me, that is the move that I think is far more prudent than trading trading Brandon Ayuk.
You know, I just feel like too, regardless of what you think of Ayuk, I think he's 25 years old, 26 years old, something like that. You sign him, he's going to be around for the next 5 or 6 years. He's going to be, I'd say 5 years. He will be a core of the team.
He just turned 26. He turned 26, on March 17th.
So say he's 26, he plays this year at age 26, say he signs a 4-year extension, he plays through 30, right? So that's sort of your core. If they did trade him this year, I think it has to be a situation where you would get a mid first or whatever, because you have to replace him.
Right.
You have to replace, because if not, here's what you're left with. Deebo, who, like you said, last year of contract and gets hurt. Mm-hmm. George Kittle, who's in his early 30s now and gets hurt. He just had a core muscle injury. He found out that he was playing with, he had to get repaired. There's just not a long time left there on those two guys, regardless of how good they've been. And here's a stat for you, okay? A lot of what you could argue, too, about whether or not they want to play Ayuk, well, the offense runs through Christian McCaffrey, right? Christian McCaffrey is sort of the engine that had made this, in terms of the skill position players, not the quarterback. So I read a stat that I almost couldn't believe the other day. McCaffrey has 130 touches in the last 2 years, just in the playoffs. 130 in the playoffs. So I looked at it since the start of 2022. He's got 798 total touches. That's 516 regular season carries, 99 postseason carries, 152 regular season touches, and 31 postseason touches. And he's going to be, 29 this year? That's a little scary. And I don't want to put up any alarm bells for anybody. And I'm not saying he's going to get hurt. But the last season, McCaffrey had over 400 total touches with the Panthers. He played 10 games combined the next 2 years. And he had, I think, 417 total touches with the playoffs last year or around there.
He's going to be 28 in June.
28 in June. Okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be his age 28 season. So he's getting to that age with running backs, with wear and tear, and with all the carries and stuff. Again, the point I'm trying to make is with those three guys, he got maybe 2 years, maybe, with those three. So if Ayuk isn't there and you did move on from him this year, you better get your contingency plans in effect really, really soon and start bringing in guys that are going to be there for what looks like to be your franchise QB, not only in 2024, but 2025, 26, 27, 28. You got to build the core for that 5 years like you have the last 5 years. And that's what worries me about getting rid of Ayuk.
Right.
Now, if they think they can replace him, I don't know what Kyle thinks. If Kyle thinks like, yeah, he's good, but there's 20 other guys like him. I don't know if they think that. Or they look at this draft and they say, well, I think there's 3 or 4 guys in here that we might have a chance at that can come in and really make a big impact. Maybe not necessarily in 2024, but we still have McCaffrey, Deebo, and Kittle right now. But 25, I like a guy or two that can really take off. So that's what I'm interested to see. And that's what the Niners have to look at. I do worry if he was not to stick around, sort of, is the cupboard going to get bare quickly? But these guys know what they're doing. You know, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, well, we're going to end up with, you know, Juwan Jennings and a bunch of scrubs in 2 years. Yeah. It's not going to be the case. They'll restack the cupboard, but I don't know. Sometimes I wonder what goes through Kyle's head. Kyle's just like, they just need me. I need dudes with legs and me, you know what I mean? So I don't.
Yeah. And I just have a hard time. I have a hard time believing that with what we've seen this team do in terms of bringing in and being aggressive and bringing in quality talent on the offensive side of the ball, right? Like they paid George Kittle what they paid him. They paid Debo, right? They went out and they got Ayuk. They brought in Christian McCaffrey, right? Like, I don't think he thinks like you only need me. I think he recognizes. And again, you know, you talk about dual timelines, and this is the dance that this team is. This is the dance that this team is, is having to figure out this offseason, is maintaining a window for the Super Bowl in 2024, but also eyeing what this team will be 2025 and beyond. Mm-hmm. And again, it sure seems to me like you've got a young QB and a young wide receiver. That is your future, right? Mm-hmm. That wide receiver and that QB who have phenomenal chemistry already. You want to build your offense around that, right? Kittle, Debo, and McCaffrey, those are guys that you focused on from 2019 forward, right? In an offense that was built around a quarterback that you didn't trust and a passing game that you didn't trust. So you wanted to maximize the run game. You wanted to maximize, you know, the efficiency of the quarterback. So you get guys like Debo, you get guys like Kittle, and you bring in running backs that you can ride till the cows come home. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they need to do that moving forward because they have a quarterback that they trust now. And perhaps they're still hedging a little bit and going, all right, well, I mean, that was one season, right? It was an MVP caliber season and we made it to the Super Bowl, but it was still one season, the second season, the only full season that this kid has had. Let's give him one more year before we're like, yeah, let's build around him. So perhaps, mm-hmm. again, it's a little bit of hesitation on their part to crown him. But I haven't heard anything from Kyle to make me think that he doesn't believe that Purdy is his, you know, is his quarterback now and into the future. So then, like I said, then you build around your talented young core of Brandon Ayuk and Brock Purdy, right? Mm-hmm. And you deal from Debo Samuel, George Kittle, and Christian McCaffrey. And to me, like I said, that is Debo Samuel. And again, this is no shade to Debo. I love Debo. I love Debo. I love what he does. I love what he brings. I love the energy he brings. I love the energy that that this team seems to feed off, like him and Trent Williams, right? Like they set the tone for who they want to be. And I don't want to diminish what that is, but also I don't want to pay $28 million in 2024 for what Debo brings, because right now that's way too much for what he brings. And so, like I said, can you move him and still compete in 2024? I think you can. Can you move Brandon Ayuk and still compete in 2024? I don't think you can. And to me, that's really the bottom line for me.
You know, when Mike Silver mentioned they were having hard conversations about some of these guys moving forward, you know, Armstead is obviously one of them because they moved on from him. But I think because this is a smart football organization. I think what they understand is that regression is coming in a lot of these players, just because it does with every player as you get older. Mm-hmm. The regression will come. You're not going to be in your early 30s and continue to, the arrow is going to continue to point up. It's just not. Your body gets beat up. We see guys fall off a cliff. And again, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I mean, George Kittle has shown no signs of slowing down. He still looks great. You know, they get, again, he gets hurt. Debo gets hurt. But when they're on the field, these guys still perform. McCaffrey was a freaking offensive player of the year last year. He was phenomenal. But when it happens, it's going to happen. Right. And I think those are maybe the conversations they're having and they are planning for it. So we just have to see, again, until we see the whole picture, which involves the draft, it's really hard to say this is what they're doing or what they're not doing. We have to do it twice a week because we have a show that we have to do twice a week.
Right.
But until we see that draft and we see what happens at the end of April, and then we can maybe say a little bit more clearly, like, all right, yeah, they understood that. They took two wide receivers. We really like these guys. or they decided, you know, they needed another edge rusher. They know Javon Hargrave is in his 30s, and then there's a bunch of band-aids. They address defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. There's still the safety. I think they're going to sign a safety, whether it's Blackman or what's his name from Denver?
Justin Simmons.
One of those guys. I think that they will. And regardless of what happens with Hufanga, he's coming off an ACL injury. And you don't know about Jair Brown. He looked good last year, but he's only in his second year. So I think they'll get another one of those guys. The picture hasn't been painted yet. It's maybe 60% painted, but there's still a lot that we have to see before we could really say, okay, this is the plan, because right now we don't know the plan. They could be super aggressive in the draft and trade up for two studs. You know what I mean? We're like, all right, these two guys are making an impact this year. We just don't know that yet. We have to wait and see the full picture.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, couple draft notes, right? And just notes on kind of what you said. One, the 49ers were at, I believe it's Western Kentucky's Pro Day. Western Kentucky has a Debo Samuel type player named Malachi Corley. He's 5'11", like 207. And they had, you know, they had representation there. That could be a guy that they could target, right, in the middle rounds in terms of maybe a replacement for Debo. Again, Xavier Leggett, right? The 6'3 blaze, just 6'3. He's 6'3, 215. And I think he ran a 4.43 or something along those lines, just blazing fast. Maybe it was a 4.3 out of South Carolina, right? Which is where they found Debo. But the other thing that I thought was interesting is, you know, the 49ers brought in Julian Blackman, right? There's rumors that they're tied to Justin Simmons, but we haven't seen, like, he hasn't visited or anything like that. And, you know, trying to piece together what their plan is at safety, considering they still have Hufanga, who is, well, not was coming off an all-pro season, right, in 2023. I was right, 2022. And then obviously the ACL injury in 2023. The other thing is you've got Dre Greenlaw coming off his Achilles. And that was one of the things that John Lynch said today, was that Dre Greenlaw is targeting week one as his return date. But as I said in our last episode with John, I was like, a return to play is not a return to performance, right? Just because he wants to be back doesn't mean that he's either A, ready to be back, or B, is going to be the same Dre Greenlaw that we're used to. So they brought in Devondre Campbell, but Devondre Campbell's game is being a run stopping linebacker now.
Right.
He's pretty poor in coverage. So one of the questions is, well, maybe they bring in a Julian Blackman or a Justin Simmons, and then they move Hufanga down to linebacker in nickel packages. Right. So you've got Fred Warner and Talanoa Hufanga as your coverage linebackers in your nickel package. And then you've got Julian Blackman or Justin Simmons and Jair Brown as your safety. So it's more of a three safety look, where one of those safeties is playing in the box as a linebacker. That's intriguing.
They did that with Eric Reed, right?
Exactly. 2017, right. They did that with Eric Reed because they didn't feel like Eric Reed had the coverage skills to be, the single high safety in a cover three. And so they moved him down to linebacker. So that's not something they haven't done before. And so, you know, they may look at it and go, we want to bring in a guy that we are confident can play safety for us. And then with Hufanga, we can find a spot for him once he returns, rather than banking on Hufanga again, recovering and returning to form. you bring in a safety and go, listen, at the very least, we can bring Hufanga in as our coverage linebacker in our nickel coverage and play more of a three safety look, which a lot of teams are going to in the NFL anyway. So I thought that was an interesting thought in terms of why are they looking at safeties in free agency. But yeah, I agree with you. I think they're going to sign a safety. And then one other thing that I thought was interesting with in John Lynch's press conference today was somebody asked him flat out, like, why did you guys bring in Brandon Staley? If he wasn't going to be defensive coordinator, and Lynch's comment was essentially, we wanted to bring Brandon Staley in because we wanted a return to our roots. And we loved what Nick Sorensen's plan was to return our defense to its roots. But we also want to be a defense and a team who is willing to evolve when we need to. And he brought up the idea of, when they brought Chris Kocurek in 2018, right after that first season, they bring Kocurek in as D-line coach, right? Because prior to him was Jeff Scanina. For one season, they bring Kocurek in and they bring the wide nine in, and the wide nine is not anything that Robert Saleh was comfortable with, but it was something that Kyle Shanahan said, I always had fits going against teams employing that wide nine. Right. Mm-hmm. And he still does, because Jim Schwartz took his lunch in Cleveland this year. But so it was a marriage of two ideas, right? This wide nine defense along with that Seattle cover three scheme that Robert Saleh was bringing in. And so with Brandon Staley, he said it's that idea of bringing in new ideas that we can graft onto what we know we're good at. And so it was, we're going to hire Sorensen as our DC to get back to our roots, but also we bring this guy in that can add a little bit more to what, to what we have already. And then he said also just that idea of having another head coach, someone who's been a head coach, apparently he sat in on meetings with free agents and things like that. And he's just a quiet, very thoughtful guy. And when mm-hmm. he speaks, he tends to speak and people listen. So I thought that was interesting for them for Lynch to bring up, because, a lot of us did have questions about why this model. And it seems like what we kind of tried to piece together ourselves sounds like exactly what this team was looking for as well. So I thought that was interesting.
All right, before we get out of here, last topic, I wanted to talk about this hip drop tackle that they banned today. Competition committee banned the hip drop. And was it Rich McKay who was talking about, the committee chair is Rich McKay? And he said they're going to have to train officials on the penalty because, and he admits it's hard to discern. This mm-hmm. scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Absolutely scares the shit out of me. So his message was that it's a penalty and call it, but call it only if you see the defender grab the opponent and get control of him, swivel him and unweight him. So kind of throw your weight on his back. The defender throws mm-hmm. their weight on his back legs, essentially.
Right.
This to me sounds like the officials can't get anything right as it is. And now you're asking right. them, you have these extremely large men who mm-hmm. move very quickly. What if you just tackle somebody and you trip, or like you get tangled up, or you're moving so fast you can't help how you land? So I understand that it's one thing, you want to take a dirty hit out of the game where somebody is grabbing someone literally falling on their legs. Okay, if you want to make that sort of an unnecessary roughness thing, I guess whatever. But this seems to me like it's so subjective that we're going to see penalties called just but from people getting tackled. In the way that this league works, in the way that the officials work, we're going to see, it's going to be under 2 minutes. The team is going to be driving at like a 4th and 8. And somebody comes up and makes a tackle on a yard short. And they're going to win the game. And here comes the flag. Oh, that was a hip drop. And you're like, what? No, it wasn't. I can already see it coming. And I did see too, that they're going to allow some replay review for roughing the passer. I think they have to do the same thing for this, because you cannot leave this in the hands of the officials. Listen, the officials drive me crazy. But even I think this puts them in a bad spot. This is so hard.
It's not fair to them.
It is not fair to them to make a call like this with how fast this game moves. I understand you want player safety. The players didn't even want this. I don't think anybody wants this. So to me, this is just another thing where the NFL is worried about lawsuits. That's the only way that I can mm-hmm. make it make sense in my head why they would pass this. I just feel like it's a disaster waiting to happen on Sundays.
Yeah. And, you know, somebody posted a video from the competition committee, and there was somebody talking, but they were showing clips of the tackles that would initiate this penalty. And one of them was the tackle. I don't know if it was Charvarius Ward or Jimmy Ward who tackled Tony Pollard last year in the Cowboys, in that playoff game against the Cowboys, right, where Pollard broke his ankle. But that was that was one of the tackles that they used as an example of what would draw a flag. And you watch that tackle and you're like, I swear to God, I have no idea what that defender is supposed to do in that situation. Right. And my concern is that especially DBs, right, against guys like giant ass tight ends and big wide receivers who outweigh these guys by anywhere from 15 to 45 pounds, right? These DBs are just going to start going for the legs. And now you're going to start getting more knee injuries because they are trying to take players out at the knees because they have no other recourse. They can't hit them high. And now you can't wrap them up around the waist, because if you do, your momentum is likely going to lift you up off the ground anyway, once you grab onto them. And all of a sudden now you're off the ground. And if you bring him down, they're going to call a penalty on you as a hip. It just doesn't make, it makes zero sense. And I understand player safety. I'm not trying to say that they shouldn't be trying to legislate hits that almost always cause injuries, right, from the game. I understand that, but this just feels like they're giving these guys no other recourse. And so I don't know if this is an attempt to continue to get points on the board, because defense is literally too afraid to tackle now. I wouldn't be surprised. But the other thing somebody brought up on Twitter that I was like, that's a good point. This is going into effect next year. One of the things that I think you're going to see smart offensive coordinators do is start doing more tight end screens out in the flat. Cause if you're getting a tight end out in the flat on DBs and they can't tackle around the waist for fear of getting flagged for a hip drop tackle, tight ends are going to feast. They are going to absolutely feast because they can't. Yeah. Because defensive backs have no recourse to bring them down. So it just seems ridiculous. And it's one of those rules where it's going to go into effect next season and teams are going to get penalized and people are going to be outraged. And then either A, the rule is going to get changed, or B, the rule is going to get removed because they realize, look, we can't legislate this. Like, it just is impossible for us without slowing the game down even more and just looking like idiots every day on a Sunday. Players came out today, like, against it. The NFLPA was against it. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense outside of, like you said, a cover your ass situation with the NFL, which, you know, they are a business, so they're allowed to do that, but it's going to affect the product in the field. And that's the thing that's most frustrating.
And they just don't care. As long as it doesn't affect their wallets, they don't care. And,
right.
You know, football is kind of an unstoppable train when it comes to that. I'm not going to stop watching. Are you? You know,
like
they know, you know, they know most people aren't. So until it hits their wallets, it doesn't matter. But it's just going to be another one of those things. And, you know, there's going to be four or five instances throughout the season where it probably costs the team a game.
Yeah.
We see it with the roughing passer calls. It does. They call them. The officials have no sense of, like, okay, there's under 2 minutes in the game. This is a little ticky tacky, or this is iffy. I'm not going to call this because it's a big spot. It's like, they just don't have that sense. So I don't expect them to gain it in the off season and be able to, you know, follow through with this rule in a way that there's any common sense whatsoever. So
yeah,
kind of scares the shit out of me, but
agreed.
I don't know. We got a long off season to think about that, I guess, but we'll see what happens. All right, Brian, I think we're done today.
I think that's it.
We'll see. Kyle Shanahan talks on Tuesday.
Yes.
Is he going to say anything? Probably not. But if he does, you know, we'll be here to break it down. And if not, we'll be here later in the week anyway to talk about something. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Thanks, everybody.
Later.